Chapter 35. Pitt solved the problem of sleeping without the constant glare from the fluorescent light by simply climbing on top of the wardrobe and disconnecting the tubes. He did not wake up until the guard brought him breakfast. He felt refreshed and dug into the thick gruel as if it were his favorite dish. The guard seemed upset at finding the light fixture dark, but Pitt simply held up his hands in a helpless gesture of ignorance and finished his gruel. 2 hours later, he was escorted to General Velikov's office. There was the expected interminable wait to crack his emotional barriers. God, but the Russians were transparent. He played along by pacing the floor and acting nervous. The next 24 hours were, to say the least, critical. He was confident that he could escape the compound again, but he could not predict any new obstacles that might be thrown in his way, or whether he would be capable of physical exertion after another interview with Foss Gly. There could be no postponement, no falling back. He had to somehow leave the island tonight. Velikov finally entered the room and studied Pitt for several moments before addressing him. There was a noticeable coldness about the general, an unmistakable toughness in his eyes. He nodded for Pitt to sit on a hard chair that hadn't been in the room during the last meeting. When he spoke, his tone was menacing. "Will you sign a valid confession to being a spy?" "If it will make you happy." "It will not pay you to act clever with me, Mr. Pitt." Pitt could not contain his anger, and it overpowered his common sense. "I do not take kindly to scum who torture women." Velikov's eyebrows raised. "Explain." Pitt repeated Gunn's and Giordino's words as though they were his. "Sound carries in concrete hallways. I've heard Jesse LeBaron's screams."
"Have you now?"
Velikov brushed at his hair in a practiced gesture. "It seems to me you should see the advantages of cooperating. If you tell me the truth, I might see my way clear to relax the discomfort of your friends. You know the truth. That's why you've reached a dead end. 4 people have given you identical stories. Doesn't that seem odd to a professional interrogator like yourself? 4 people who have been physically tortured in separate sessions and yet give the same answers to the same questions. The utter lack of depth in the Russian mentality equals your fossilized infatuation with confessions. If I signed a confession for espionage, you'd demand another for crimes against your precious state, followed up with one for spitting on a public sidewalk. Your tactics are as unsophisticated as your architecture and gourmet recipes. 1 demand comes on the heels of another. The truth? You wouldn't accept the truth if it rose up out of the ground and bit you in the balls." Velikov sat silent and examined Pitt with the contempt only a Slav could show to a Mongol. "I'll ask you again to cooperate. I'm only a marine engineer. I don't know any military secrets. My only interest is what your superiors told you about this island and how you came to be here. What are the percentages? You've already made it clear my friends and I are to die. Perhaps your future can be extended. Makes no difference. We've already told you all we know." Velikov drummed his fingers on the desktop. "You still claim you landed on Cayo Santa Maria purely by chance?"
"I do."
"And you expect me to believe that of all the islands and all the beaches in Cuba, Mrs. LeBaron came ashore at the exact spot, without any prior knowledge, I might add, where her husband was residing?"
"Frankly, I've had a tough time believing it too, but that's exactly how it happened."
Velikov glared at Pitt, but he seemed to sense an integrity that he could not bring himself to approve. "I have all the time in the world, Mr. Pitt. I'm convinced you're withholding vital information. We'll talk again when you're not so arrogant." He pushed a button on his desk that summoned the guard. There was a smile on his face, but there was no satisfaction, no hint of pleasure. If anything, the smile was sad.
"You must excuse me for being so abrupt," said Foss Gly. "Experience has taught me that the unexpected produces more effective results than lengthy anticipation." No word had been spoken when Pitt entered Room 6. He had taken only 1 step over the threshold when Gly, who was standing behind the half-opened door,
struck him in the small of his back, just above the kidney. He gasped in agony and nearly blacked out, but somehow remained standing. "So, Mr. Pitt, now that I have your attention, perhaps there is something you wish to say to me."
"Did anybody ever tell you you're a psycho case?" Pitt muttered through pressed lips.
He saw the fist flashing out, expected it, and rolled with the punch, reeling backward into a wall and melting to the floor, feigning unconsciousness. He tasted the blood inside his mouth and felt a numbness creeping over the left side of his face. He kept his eyes closed and lay limp. He had to feel his way with this sadistic hulk of slime, assess Gly's reaction to answers and attitude, and predict when and where the next blow would strike. There would be no stopping the brutality. His only objective was to survive the interrogation without a crippling injury. Gly went over to a dirty wash basin, filled a bucket of water, and splashed it on Pitt. "Come now, Mr. Pitt, if I'm any judge of men, you can take a punch better than that." Pitt struggled to his hands and knees, spit blood on the cement floor, and groaned convincingly, almost pitiable.
"I can't tell you any more than I already have," he mumbled.
Gly picked him up as if he were a small child and dropped him in a chair. Out of the corner of one eye, Pitt caught Gly's right fist coming at him in a vicious swing. He rode the impact as best he could, catching the blow just above the cheekbone under the temple. For a few seconds, he absorbed the stunning pain and then pretended to pass out again. Another bucket of water, and he went through his moaning routine. Gly leaned down until they were face to face.
"Who are you working for?"
Pitt raised his hands and clutched his throbbing head.
"I was hired by Jessie LeBaron to find out what happened to her husband."
"You landed from a submarine."
"We left the Florida Keys in a blimp."
"Your purpose in coming here was to gather information on the transfer of power in Cuba." Pitt furrowed his brow in confusion.
"Transfer of power? I don't know what you're talking about."
This time Gly struck Pitt in the upper stomach, knocking every cubic inch of wind from him. Then he calmly sat down and watched the reaction. Pitt went rigid as he fought for breath. He felt as if his heart had stopped. He could taste the bile in his throat, feel the sweat seep from his forehead, and his lungs seemed to be twisted in knots. The walls of the room wavered and swam before his eyes. Gly looked to be smiling wickedly at the end of a long tunnel.
"What were your orders once you arrived on Cayo Santa Maria?"
"No orders," Pitt rasped. Gly rose and approached to strike again. Pitt drunkenly came to his feet, swayed for a moment, and began to sag, his head drooping to one side. He had Gly's measure now. He recognized a weak point. Like most sadists, Gly was basically a coward. He would flinch and be thrown off his track if he was evenly matched. Gly flexed his body to swing, but suddenly froze in stunned astonishment. Bringing up his fist from the floor and pivoting his shoulder, Pitt threw a right-hand cross that carried every ounce of power he could muster. He connected with Gly's nose, mashing the cartilage and breaking the bone. Then he followed up with two left jabs and a solid hook to the body. He might as well have attacked the cornerstone of the Empire State Building. Any other man would have fallen flat on his back. Gly staggered back a few feet and stood there with his face slowly reddening in rage. The blood streamed from his nose, but he took no notice of it. He raised one fist and shook it at Pitt.
"I'll kill you for that," he said.
"Stick it in your ear," Pitt replied sullenly. He grabbed the chair and threw it across the room. Gly merely smashed it aside with his arm. Pitt caught the shift of the eyes and realized his whiplash speed was about to lose out to brute strength. Gly tore the wash basin from the wall, literally ripped it from its plumbing, and lifted it over his head. He took three steps and heaved it in Pitt's direction. Pitt jumped sideways and ducked around in one convulsive motion. As the sink sailed toward him like a safe falling from a high building, he knew his reaction came a split second too late. He threw up his hands instinctively in a hopeless gesture to ward off the flying mass of iron and porcelain. Pitt's salvation came from the door,
The latch caught the main crush from one corner of the wash basin and was smashed out of its catch. The door burst open and Pitt was knocked backward into the hallway, crashing in a heap at the feet of the startled guard. A shooting pain in his groin and right arm compounded the agonies already piercing his side and head. Gray-faced, waves of nausea sweeping over him, he shook away the beckoning unconsciousness and came to his feet, his hands spread on the wall for support. Gly tore the sink from the doorway where it had become jammed and stared at Pitt with a look that could only be described as murderous. "You're a dead man, Pitt. You're going to die slowly, an inch at a time, begging to be put out of your agony. The next time we meet, I'll snap every bone in your body and tear your heart out." There was no fear in Pitt's eyes. The pain was draining away, to be replaced with elation. He had survived. He hurt, but the way was clear. "The next time we meet," he said vengefully, "I'll carry a big club."